Few weeks, we've taken a break from where we've been as a church. We've been in the Gospel of Mark. Here at Four Points, we love kind of camping out in a book of the Bible. We love going verse by verse. We love going chapter by chapter. We believe that as you do that, God shows you things that you don't always see when you hop around throughout the Bible. And so that's kind of how we like to do it here at Four Points as a Bible-based church. But we've taken a short break from the Gospel of Mark, and we're jumping back in today. And today we're going to be in Mark chapter 8. And if you have a worship guide on the front under the date, it kind of gives a kind of a somewhat of a title. We don't really have a title for the message, but it says same, same, but different. If you've ever been to Southeast Asia, maybe you've come across this phrase. I spent a little bit of time in Cambodia, but my understanding is all over Thailand, Cambodia, Indonesia, those areas, when you travel there, you just come across this phrase and you never really know the first person who said it. Same, same, but different. And for me, when I was in Cambodia, here's where I saw it most clearly. I would be in the market and there would be a t-shirt vendor on this side, a t-shirt vendor on this side, and two t-shirt vendors at the end of the aisle. And everybody's trying to sell me a t-shirt and they're all gotten their t-shirts from the same place, but they have to try to tell me and convince me that there's something different about their t-shirt. And all I'm looking for is a difference in the price, right? But that was my experience. And I would ask people in Cambodia, what does it mean? And they didn't really know. There's like same, same, but different. I even bought a shirt and on the front it said same, same. On the back it said, but different. And so as I was thinking about today's message, I actually had the opportunity to preach a few weeks ago on Mark chapter 6. And as I was thinking about it, I was like, wait a minute. Didn't this already happen, what we're going to be looking at today? In Mark chapter 6, we see Jesus feed a great multitude. And here in Mark chapter 8, he feeds a multitude again. So it's like, Mark is a man of few words. It is the shortest gospel of all the gospels. So in my mind, I'm going, if Mark's all about efficiency, wouldn't he just kind of pick the one that's going to make the bigger noise and leave the other one out? In chapter 6, we see him feed 5,000. And in chapter 8, we see he's feeding 4,000. Let's just leave the 4,000 one out, right, Mark? Because you just want to keep straight to the point, right? Just the facts, ma'am. But he doesn't. Because, in fact, even though so much of this passage is the same, it is different. And all the stuff that's the same, here's what's interesting, and here's what I want us to notice today. All the stuff in this passage that is the same, I see it as Mark going, look, the church he is, the people he is writing it to, and now us who stand here holding the word, and now this is his gospel to us, it is him saying to us, I don't know if you got it the first time. That's the part that's the same. But then there's also some stuff that's different. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at this passage together. And the part that's the same has drawn me right back to this thought about the heart, about the condition of our heart. So if I was going to give it another title, I would give it the title, Spiritual Heart Conditions. Because just like in chapter 6, if you were with us in chapter 6, we talked about how so much of what was happening and the misunderstanding that the disciples had was because their heart was hard. And so much of that passage, Mark is bringing us around to the condition of our heart. He's talking about the disciples and he's talking about us and he's kind of pointing his finger in our chest and he's saying, do you understand who Jesus is? Or is your heart not in a place to receive what he's saying and what he's doing? So here again, as I look at this passage, chapter 8, I see different types of heart conditions. And I see four heart conditions show up. One, the hungry heart. Two, the doubting heart. Three, the polluted heart. And four, the petrified heart. Hungry heart, doubting heart, polluted hearts, and petrified hearts. And I just want to say already, I'm not going to ask you if you deal with these heart conditions because we all deal with these heart conditions on some level or another. So let's allow God to speak to us today. And let's allow him to kind of tell us, hey, that's your heart condition. That's what you're dealing with. And here's the thing. I've been thinking about this. So often I find myself saying, I struggle with this or that. And just saying I struggle with it makes me feel better. There's something going on. Brent said several weeks ago, he talked about we have this epidemic of weak pulpits. And I think for some reason we have this way where we just look at God's grace and we say, man, his grace is sufficient, and it is. But then we look at what we struggle with and we say, I admitted it, let's move on, but it never changes. We need to be a church that when we say, yes, I am suffering from a hungry heart, that we then go, that's got to change. Or I'm suffering from a polluted heart. I'm not okay with just saying it. Something's got to change in me. And so I hope, church, that today, as God reveals things and says, yep, that's your deal, that we don't just walk out of here and say, yeah, I've got a hungry heart. We walk out of here and go, I got to do something about that. So that's my hope. That's what he's been showing me with myself personally. And I hope he shows all of us that. And so here's what I want to do. I want us to read this passage. I want us to read the whole passage. I'm not going to stop. We've been doing that a lot as well here as of late. We want to really have a reverency for the Word of God. And even though it is his Word and we can read it out on the back porch, we can read it wherever we are, there's something about joining together as a community and slowing down and reading the scriptures together that it's just something beautiful about it. And so in honor of this being God's word, I would like to ask everyone to stand with me. And I want us to read it. I'm not asking you to read out loud. You won't be able to keep up. But read along as I read. And let's read with reverence God's word. Because this is the living word of God. In chapter 8. In those days, when again a great crowd had gathered, and they had nothing to eat, he called his disciples to him and said to them, I have compassion on the crowd, because they have been with me now for 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way, and some of them have come from a far way. And his disciples answered him, how can one feed these people with bread here in this desolate place? And he asked them, how many loaves do you have? They said, 7. And he directed the crowd to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves, and having given thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples to sit before the people. And they set them before the crowd, and they had a few small fish. And having blessed them, he said that these also should be set before the people. And they ate and were satisfied. And they took up the broken pieces left over, 7 baskets full. And there were about 4,000 people, and he sent them away. And immediately he got into the boat with his disciples and went to the district of Dalmanutha. And then we see a little bit of a shift here. The Pharisees came and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. And he left them, got into the boat again, and went to the other side. Now, they had forgotten to bring bread, that's the disciples, and they had only 1 loaf with them in the boat. And he cautioned them, saying, watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. And they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000? That's the first one. How many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? And they said, 12. And the 7 for the 4,000. And how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? And they said to him, 7. And he said to them, do you not yet understand? This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. So, I see in here 4 heart conditions. And the first one that I see is the condition of a hungry heart. Bruce Springsteen says that everybody's got one. He's the boss, right? So he must be right. Think about that song. Any Bruce Springsteen fans in the house? Nobody? You're probably die hard, aren't you? Because you can't be lukewarm about Bruce Springsteen. But anyway, he wrote that song, Hungry Heart, and the title was based after a poem. The poem was by Alfred Lord Tennyson, Ulysses. It's a famous poem. My wife could break it down for you because she studied English and literature in school. I can't, but I can tell you this. That poem is all about how Ulysses, the great and powerful king Ulysses from the Iliad, the Odyssey, and all those times way back when, how he just couldn't be satisfied staying at home and being the king. So he had to go back out into the land of adventure. Basically, he was having a midlife crisis. And he had to get out of there. And so Bruce Springsteen takes from that this idea of everybody's got a hungry heart. But you know what? Bruce Springsteen's not the only one. The Bible says it too. Check this out. In Ecclesiastes 2:23. No, we're not there. Oh, sorry. I just looked here and thought that was on the screen, but it's not. He's just ready for me. Sorry. In Ecclesiastes 2:23, here's what it says. Talking about our heart. Think about this. Think about your life. Think about how you often feel. And think about this. In 2:23 of Ecclesiastes, it says that even at night, the heart doesn't rest. Doesn't that speak to the way we feel so often? That song we sang a minute ago, it talks about how I am prone to wander. Here's the thing. I think we all suffer from a hungry heart. Look at the passage. I want to point something out to you. Look at this passage. Chapter 8. Let's see here. Okay, so his disciples, he comes to his disciples, he tells them we need to feed the people, and his disciples answer him in verse 4. How can one feed these people with bread here in this desolate place? Okay, when you look at the Greek, here's what it says. Think about this. Here's what it says. The disciples say, how can anyone satisfy, the Greek word is not just feed, like let's put food on the table. The Greek word here is satisfy. How can anyone satisfy these people here? See, I think that this is speaking to so much more than physical food. How can anyone satisfy here? And where is here? Here's the interesting thing. When we see desolate place, we often think in terms of they were in the desert. You know, it's one of these things where they're seeing mirages and all this kind of stuff. Chances are, according to scholars, it was spring. And chances are, everywhere they looked, it was lush and beautiful. So here they are. They're coming to Jesus. You look around, and everywhere you look, life's great. And his disciples say, in the middle of this, how can anyone satisfy these people? And then they say, with bread. And again, we're kind of taking the literal and we're kind of giving it a little bit of a figurative spin, but I think it's okay to do, because anything Jesus does physically is to tell us about who he is as the Son of God. And so here they are asking this question, but the question is so much bigger than them. Because here's the deal. Think about the world we live in. Think about this, Ecclesiastes 2:23. Even at night, the heart doesn't rest. And then think about the culture we live in. What do you do when you're not satisfied with your car? You get a new one. What do you do in this culture that we live in where you're not satisfied with your job? Man, you're not satisfied? Go get a new one. And the culture we live in also says things like this. Oh, you're not satisfied with your marriage? Go get a new one. You're not satisfied with your church? Go get a new one. You're not satisfied with your God? Change the definition of God. Is that not the culture we live in? And you know what? We can end on that last one and be righteous. And we can say, we don't do that. God, he's our God. We know this. But think about all the areas of your life where you live in dissatisfaction. Who can be satisfied with bread here in this place? Everywhere you look, every time I go in the grocery store, I see this epidemic. When you can't help it, all the tabloids, it's like when you go into the checkout, it's like you have to go through this portal of dissatisfaction. Have you ever thought of it that way? It's like you're getting in line and it's like, you're not satisfied with your body? Do this. You're not satisfied with how much money you're getting? Do this. And hey, guess what? Jen and Ben aren't satisfied. So you know what? They're way up here and they're not satisfied. So the kings and the queens and the princesses of the world, if they're not satisfied and they're changing, then you can change your life too, because it's okay to do differently when you're not satisfied. But here's what's crazy. The higher you go, the more you get. All you got to do is look at Hollywood. The more you have, the more dissatisfied you become. Because no one can find satisfaction in this wilderness that we live in. When I read this, here's what's crazy. This whole passage keeps talking about bread, but it's not about the bread. And it ends with, do you still not understand? It's Jesus screaming. You guys are so caught up with the here and now, you're missing who I am and that I'm standing in front of you. And so right here, I'm reminded of this place where Jesus was also in a desert place, a wilderness. And you know what? It's the same word. And when Jesus went into the wilderness to fast for 40 days, Satan comes up to him. He's hungry and asks him, said, hey, why don't you turn that rock into bread? And Jesus says, the word says, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. You know where that comes from? Deuteronomy chapter 8. We don't have time to go there. But in Deuteronomy chapter 8, here's what's happening. The Israelites have left Egypt. They have wandered in the desert for 40 years. And God is finally saying, you get to enter the promised land. And Moses comes before them and said, don't forget the past 40 years. Don't forget, because here's what's going to happen if you forget. Now think about our own life and think about the culture we live in. If you forget, you will go into the promised land and you will begin to think that all the stuff around you was your doing. You'll begin to think that all the stuff around you is what life is about. And you will start trying to be satisfied by the stuff around you. And you will make those things your God. And you will lose sight of the one who put you there. It is happening. Just because we show up at church on Sunday morning, and just because we read our Bible every now and then, does not exempt us from having this wandering, hungry heart. All we have to do is look at the things that bother us, the things that worry us, the things that get us worked up, and we go, wow, who can satisfy? And so what is Jesus' response to that? What is Jesus' response to us living that way? Here's what's awesome. Jesus looks at his disciples and he says, I have compassion on the crowd. He looks at us and he sees us running around with empty hearts. And I'm sure it frustrates him, but there is also compassion there. And he also looks on and he says, I have compassion. And this compassion, this compassion, this word, I said it in chapter 6, it is reserved for Jesus. This is his word. It is a compassion that we only see in the whole Bible associated with Jesus, and it is for us. And so if you're here this morning and you go, you know what? I just feel dissatisfied with everything around me. Here's what he would say. He would say, I see that, and I want you to know that you're not going to be filled until you come to me. And in that passage, here's what's cool. I want you to get this image in your head, because we look at that passage, and I don't know how your mind works, but I always think in like special effects mode. And so I'm imagining Jesus praying over this food, right? He's praying over the bread, and then all of a sudden, it's like the commercial, is a Geico commercial where the genie, he asked the genie for $1 million, and then all the deer show up in his room, and it's just poof. You know what I'm talking about? So I think of it like that. Jesus prays, and there's bread everywhere. But I don't think that's what was happening. Here's what I think. I think that only as Jesus broke and handed out did the bread multiply. And so just picture Jesus there, just grabbing bread. It is life to life, life to life, life to life in that moment. And get that image as it relates to your life. Get that image as it relates to you going to different places, and here he is. The only place to be satisfied is receiving from his hands. Life to life. There's something else that's cool about this passage. The first time, we have Mark telling us. If you're here today and you're going, I have no business being here. I have no business receiving anything from God. If you knew my life, I don't deserve anything from him. Two things that I want to tell you. First of all, the first time we see this passage in chapter 6, the audience, the people in front of him are Jews. They are from the chosen family, right? Here's one of the reasons I think Mark makes sure we get this second account. The Bible says that he was in the Decapolis, which is the 10 cities. More than likely, this was a Greco-Roman group in front of him. They were not supposed to be a part of the family. And Jesus says, I'm here for you too. How awesome is that? That the Bible, that this gospel shows us, look, he's come for everybody. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you're from, doesn't matter what you've done, he has compassion on you. And there's another thing that kind of came to my attention with this idea of compassion. The first time, if you've got a red letter Bible, which means the words from Jesus are in red, the first time when you hear about Jesus' compassion in chapter 6, Mark tells us Jesus had compassion on them. This time, the words are in red. Well, why is that important? Okay, let's go back to our middle school days. You have a crush on somebody. All right, think about it. I'm sure you've had this experience. You have a crush on somebody and you have a mutual friend. And so you tell your mutual friend, you need to be my eyes and ears. So you come to me, you tell me what they said, and they come to you and you're talking to them. He's like, we talked about you the other day. I think they like you. Really, did they say that? No, she didn't say that. She just kind of got a smile when I talked about you. Oh, well, that's something. But then let's say the next day they come to you. Hey, listen, we were talking about you the other day. Really? What? She really, really likes you. Did she smile again? No. She said, I really, really, really like him. There's a difference, right? It's like, wait. You're telling me that the words came out of her mouth. Actually, these were the words. I think he's the cutest boy in school. He's so awesome. I love the way he throws a baseball. And I really, 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 really like him. all right, we're good. This time around, as if you didn't hear it the first time, Jesus says, I have compassion on you. And it comes from his lips this time. And he looks at you and he says, I see them. Their hearts are like scavengers. And they are trying to fill it with everything but me. And I want them to know that they're going to fall on their way home if they don't come to me. I love the way Blaise Pascal says this. Let's pull this quote up. He says, this he tries in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there the help he cannot find in those that are. Though none can help, since this infinite abyss can be filled only with an infinite and immutable object, in other words, by God himself. He says he tries in vain to fill his heart with everything but God. Church, if you would say with the Rolling Stones, I can't get no satisfaction, there's a reason for that. It's because you're looking at the wrong stuff to get them. We have a hungry heart. You know what's awesome? Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. If you've never sought after God, you don't know what it means to be filled. But he wants to fill you this morning. Number two, the doubting heart. Let's talk about the doubting heart for a minute. In the passage, it is a testing heart. So look at, we move on past this passage into verse 11. And in verse 11, after this had happened, the Pharisees come up to him seeking a sign. And here's what it says. Seeking a sign from him that they may test him. And Jesus says, the Bible says that Jesus sighed deeply in his spirit. And so I want to talk about this for a minute, because there is a big difference between doubt and just straight up testing unbelief. And sometimes, I grew up in the church, I was one of those that, if you've ever heard this phrase, I cut my teeth on the pew, okay? I was born in church. I never missed church. I'm that kid that would miss football practice to go to church. A little bit pharisaical, I know, but that's what I grew up doing, right? And in the churches I grew up in, it was often seen as negative to have doubt. And as I went through my high school years, I was plagued with doubt, and I had to deal with it. And so I have a feeling there's probably some in here, it might be teenagers in here, that were feeling like me, and you're going, I don't know what I believe. And now all of a sudden I think I'm sinning from wondering if all this is true. And so I just want to set everybody at ease. There's a difference between testing and doubting. The Pharisees, the word for test is the same word used for Satan when he tempted Jesus. They were coming to kind of like try to prove him wrong, and he saw their heart. And he sighs deeply, going, man, they don't want to know me. They're not asking for a sign because they just really want to know the truth. They're asking for a sign because they want to prove me wrong. Today, some of the people you could use, I'll just give you two examples. Richard Dawkins, anybody familiar with Richard Dawkins? That's an example of a guy. He is not just an atheist. He's like all about trying to tear down Christianity, because he's like the Pharisees as it relates to this deal of a sign. He doesn't want to know the truth. Bill Maher.
Y'all know who that is.
He doesn't want to know the truth. He just wants to prove that he's right. Y'all could probably name some of your own. People, there's a difference between testing. And I don't know where you are today, but if you're here, the reason I'm making this point is I want you to know that there's a difference between people who have honest doubt and people who test God. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, there's a guy named Gideon. If we had time to look at it, you can write down this note, Judges, I think chapter 6, and you can look at it later. But Gideon, an angel appears to him, and you know what he does? He asks for a sign. But the angel doesn't sigh deeply, because the angel, God, knows his heart. They know, God knows that this man wants truth. In the New Testament, just a few chapters from now, just one chapter from now, chapter 9, we find a father whose son is sick, and he comes to Jesus, and Jesus says, "Do you believe?" And what does the man say? "I believe. Help my unbelief." In other words, I'm doubting, but I so desperately want to know truth. There's another one. I love this guy because he just speaks to me. Thomas in John chapter 20. All the disciples have seen Jesus after he rose from the dead, but Thomas. And Thomas says, I can't believe this. He has been with Jesus. He's seen him feed the 5,000. He's seen him raise Lazarus from the dead. And now he just doesn't believe that he's alive. But it's not because he doesn't want to. And he says, I'm not going to. And then Jesus comes to him. And listen to this. Jesus says to him, "Hey, Thomas," and I'm paraphrasing, "you're struggling, aren't you? Here. Touch my hand." He doesn't send him away. He doesn't sigh deeply. He says, "Look at my side. Do you need to put your hand in my side? Is that going to help you believe?" It's beautiful. For every Richard Dawkins, for every Bill Maher, there's a C.S. Lewis. There's a Lee Strobel. There's a Josh McDowell. Guys, they didn't believe in God, but they wanted to know truth. And they opened their hearts and they said, "If it's true, I will believe it." One of the latest incredible, beautiful stories I've seen, you've got to go check out this lady's story if you haven't, Rosaria Butterfield. Write it down. Rosaria Butterfield. In light of the court ruling that just happened, you need to see this lady's story. She was an advocate for the gay lesbian community. She was a lesbian, and she just began to be filled with truth, and she just opened up to it, and God changed her heart. And now she goes around speaking, all because she just opened her heart and said, I don't know, but I'm open to truth. And so here's the deal. If you are here this morning and you would say, "I do have doubts. I don't like admitting them in this kind of circle because I would be seen as, I'm telling you, you won't be." Here's what God asks of you. Matthew chapter 5, verse 8. We're not going to pull it up. Listen to this. Matthew chapter 5, verse 8 is another beatitude. Jesus says, "Blessed are the pure in heart." Anybody know the end of it? "For they shall see God." If you're here today and you're going, "I'm struggling. I'm not sure what all I think. I've been showing up here. I love what's happening here, but I just don't have it all together." You know what I would say? I'd say the same thing Brent says. Keep coming. And just keep opening your heart and allow him to do the rest. And just make sure you don't do what Psalm 14 says. The fool says in his heart, "There is no God." Just open up. Even if you're not even sure God's there, Don't shake your fist and try to prove him wrong. Just open up. Because there's a difference between doubt and testing. Number three, the polluted heart. Let's talk about the polluted heart for a minute. In the text, Jesus says, he doesn't just say it once, he says it twice. He says, beware, take heed of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Okay, he says it twice. It must be important, right? The leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. What is this? First of all, what is leaven? Does everybody know what leaven is? The bread makers in the room. We have a few of you. I know Cammie Purnell mills her own wheat. It's awesome. I've had bread that Cammie Purnell has made. It is awesome. We have a few in here, and every now and then I get blessed by their bread. It is yeast. Leaven is yeast. It is what makes dough rise. And Jesus says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of Herod. So in this context, is it a positive or a negative? It's a negative, right? And why is it negative? What is so negative about it? We have to go back to the Old Testament, and we see the story in Exodus chapter 12, where the Israelites are leaving Egypt. And Moses says, God says to the people, do not put any yeast in your bread because you don't have time. You've got to get out of town. You've got to get out of Egypt, and it's going to be a quick leave. And so they set up the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And so here's the thing, and I don't have time to get all into it, but every year these people, his disciples, would have celebrated the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which was 7 days of eating bread without leaven in it. Let me just tell y'all something. Several months ago, we had communion, and we had somebody make bread without yeast, the little wafers. Y'all probably going, that's what that was. They were a little bit bigger, they were a little bit harder to eat, and they did not taste as good as that bread we had the last time we did communion with the yeast in it. And I was like, my goodness, we forgot to tell everybody. And so everybody's eating this, and I'm trying to eat this unleavened bread, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my goodness, we forgot to tell everybody. They're sitting here going, what in the world is this? Look, it is just not as good as the stuff Cammie Purnell makes with the yeast and everything in it. And for 7 days, that's what they chomped on, and they remembered this. They remembered what happened in Egypt. And so these disciples, they know all of that. And so they understand what he means when he says, beware of that. Because here's what would happen. Back then, yeast spores, it's an air thing. If you just left your bread out, yeast would get in it. Because yeast is airborne. And so yeast was something, leaven was something that would happen even when you didn't do anything. And so he's saying to them, remember how every year you have to clean house? You have to get all the leaven out of your house for the Feast of Unleavened Bread? Remember how you have to make sure that it's nowhere in sight because your bread will get messed up otherwise and you have to celebrate this? Beware. Because the same thing that you have to do there, you have to do with what you believe. You have to do with how you look at the world. You have to do with how you live. Because the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod, it's going to find its way into what you believe. And it will tear you down. And in the Old Testament, the Bible says that that to anyone that does not celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread, they will at some point or another be cut off because they are not grabbing hold of truth anymore. And so you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread that they're thinking about, and here they are, the leaven of Herod and the leaven of the Pharisees. And so what is that? What does he mean? If we just look in Mark, do y'all remember the story of the beheading of John the Baptist? Remember that? Let's talk about Herod for a minute. In Mark chapter 6. Herod throws a party. And in this party, his daughter asks for the head of John the Baptist. And in verse, 26, it says, but because of his, it says he felt sorry. He did not want to take the head off of John the Baptist for a lot of reasons. But because of his oath and because of his guests, he did it anyway. So here's Herod. He's worried about what people think. Right? He's worried. He's like, I got all these guests here. They're popular. They're cool. I want to please them. I want to have acceptance with them. So for Herod, his leaven, and we could talk about a lot of different things, but Herod's leaven is acceptance. He just wanted to be accepted. The Pharisees, we talked about that in chapter 7. They worship God, or they how does it say it? They honor God with their lips, but their hearts were far from him. They honor God with their lips, but their hearts were far from him. In other words, they had this idea of appearance. His was acceptance, theirs was appearance. So for Herod, he was all about everybody accepting him and thinking he was cool. For the Pharisees, they were all about what they looked like. They were all about people thinking they had it all together. And Jesus talks about this in chapter 7. But behind the scenes, their life was a wreck. So let me ask you, in your neighborhood, in your workplace, in your school, do you know people that are all about appearance? They're all about what people think they're doing, not about what they're really doing. Do you know people that are all about being accepted? I can't say that. They won't like me anymore. I can't do that. I just want everybody to like me. Do you know people that make decisions based on staying accepted? Now, third question, are you one of them? You know what? I'm telling you, because I know my own life. To some degree or another, you are. Every one of us. We struggle with appearance. We struggle with wanting to be accepted by the stuff around us. And we can't be okay with that. Because he says it's leaven. And what does yeast do? Once you put it in the dough, it infiltrates all of it, not just part of it. It's not like you can bake it and one half has yeast in it and the other half doesn't. And what does yeast do? It puffs up. Yeast puffs up. And so here's my question. And here's, I think, God's question. What are you leaning on to puff you up? What are you looking for to make you feel good? In 1 Corinthians 5, 6 through 8, we're not going to turn there, but in 1 Corinthians 5, 6 through 8, you know what Paul says? Paul says, there's only one thing. There's only one thing that we can hold to, and it's Jesus. It's Jesus. It's his cross. It's who he is. And he says, take all the leaven and throw out the whole batch. Clean house. And I look at the way I think, and I think about the way we as a church, we as a people think, not Four Points specifically, but we as a people think. And I think, you know what? There's some house cleaning that needs to happen. And so Mark asks us, through Jesus says to us, do you have leaven in your life? What is puffing you up? And if you do, you got to do something about it. You can't just go home and say, yeah, you know what? I'm struggling with appearance and I'm struggling with being accepted by people, but okay. No, we got to clean house. We got to come to Jesus and say, you help me make you my only. The fourth thing, a petrified heart. Jesus says at the end of this passage, verse 21, he says, do you not yet understand? Do you not yet understand? What do they not understand? What do they not understand? And it's this simple. His disciples don't understand this sentence right here. Jesus is trying to say to them, I am, and I am with you. I am, and I am with you. You see, they go, after everything that's happened, they're still worried about bread. And they're still missing the point. And the point is, when will you realize that I am enough? And that as long as I am with you, you don't have to worry about anything else. You see, here's the deal. We often look at, we take the feeding of the 5,000 and we apply it to our lives and we say things like, if Jesus can do that, if he can feed the 4,000, then whatever your need is, he can help you find another job. And you know what? That's true. Or let's use another example. If Jesus can feed the 4,000 with this little bit of stuff, then he can help you find a spouse. You take someone who's single. You say, he can help you find a spouse. And that is true. But you know what? Preaching that message is still making it about the bread. What do I mean? It's still making it about the things, not about the giver. You see, what Jesus is saying to the person that is single, who longs for a spouse, he's saying, before, yes, I may give you a spouse and I may not, but what I want you to know is I'm enough. And I don't know how, and you don't know how it's going to play out, but if you can get to a place where you go, my answers aren't going to be solved when I get a spouse. My answer's not going to be solved when I get a new job. My answer's not going to be solved when I get in better shape. When we get to that place, we stop making it about the stuff. We stop making it about the bread. And we begin to understand that we really, truly only need Jesus. It's so hard to get there. And you know why? Because our life is full of leaven. Because as soon as we step out of church and we go home, we fall right back into saying, I wonder how God can help me get. Instead of going, I just want Jesus. I don't want to find fulfillment outside of him, period. I don't want to find fulfillment in anything or anyone but him. And that's what he's trying to tell his disciples, and that's what he's trying to tell us. And every day, we take our eyes and we put it back on the lush environment around us because we're infected by the same leaven. We want those same things. So here's where it brings us. And it's not a band, but Jenny can come on back. It brings us to this place where he asks us the question, do you still not understand? Right now. I mean, I am not at a place. I am not at a place where if everything I have was taken out from under me tomorrow, I would just look to Jesus and go, how are you going to take care of this one? I wouldn't do that. I would freak out. I would start to worry. I would think he did it to me. And on and on and on I go. If you lost your job tomorrow, what would be your immediate response? We're full of leaven. And so now, in just a minute, we're going to take communion. And as we do, ask him, say, God, show me where I don't understand. Show me where my life has leaven in it. Show me where I'm more concerned about what people think than I am you. Show me where I'm more concerned about status, where I'm more concerned about accomplishments than you. Show me where I'm more concerned about acceptance and appearance. Show me where I'm trying to get satisfied and I'm trying to satisfy my hungry heart apart from you. Show me. And as I take this cup and as I take this bread, may I hear you say to me, only I can satisfy you. To the hungry heart in the room, he has compassion for you and he can satisfy you. For the doubting in the room, he says, touch my side. Touch my hands. To the polluted heart in the room, you know what he says? He says, it's time to clean house. He says, you need to go home. You need to find out where the leaven is. You need to get it out of there. For some of us, that might mean it's time to fast. It might mean it's time to fast something. Maybe something on TV is influencing you. I don't know. Maybe whatever it is, there's things that we think we need and we don't need them. And so when we fast, it reminds us that we don't need them. And when we realize we don't need them, we realize that all we need is Jesus. So maybe some of us need to go home and start fasting. Some of us need to go home and go, what is it? What is it I'm doing? And what is it that's affecting my life that's causing me to think it's about how I look and it's about how people think about me? What is it in my life that's doing that? I got to change that. And you know how you tell what it is? When as you begin to think of letting it go, it scares you. When you begin to go, man, if I stop that, oh man, I'm not going to be filled. That's the thing that's got to change. And it might be something that just has to change for a time. Just like them wandering in the desert for 40 years. It might just be a time. But some of us need to clean house. And others of us, our hearts have just grown hard because of all those other things. And we just need to remember today, he's enough. So the ushers are going to come down and they're going to be passing out the communion elements. Y'all stay in your seats. And then after the song ends, after we've passed out all the elements, I'll come back and we will partake of communion together. And as the ushers are getting in place, let's bow our heads and let's go ahead and begin this process of reflection.